Let me explain. What I'm interested in here is whether we should worry about diversity of aesthetic view, by which I mean the fact that there are a variety of views on any particular film, book, song about what its aesthetic value is. Should we care about such diversity of view? And the background to this is that, of course, what's interesting is that in almost all jurisdictions, media industries, unlike any other industry, are not just subject to legislation with respect to is there adequate competition, they're also subject to a public interest test with respect to whether there is adequate pluralism of view in the media. And in, again, most jurisdictions, certainly the EU and the UK, when you look closely at the nature of the pluralism of view that's being safeguarded by this public interest test in these media industries, it's oriented towards political views. Is there an adequate representation of political views in these media industries? And that was most evident in the most recent bid in the UK, which was, of course, the prospective purchase of B2B by News International. Ofcom focused exclusively on the political aspects of that and no other aspect. And the question is, in a sense, should we worry as much about the diversity of aesthetic view that you have in newspapers, for example, as much as you worry about the adequacy of a plurality of political views in those industries? And so that's the question that I'm interested in, is should we worry about diversity of aesthetic view in the same way that we worry about diversity of political view with respect to the operation of media industries? And my approach to answering that question here is to start off by asking, well, why do we actually care about diversity? Yes, the point it just about works at this distance. Why do we actually care about diversity in the first place? And do those arguments plausibly apply to diversity of aesthetic view as well? And if they do apply to diversity of aesthetic view as much as they do to diversity of political views, is it still nevertheless the case that, as a matter of fact, if we focused exclusively on diversity of political views, we would have captured the diversity of aesthetic views, because, as a matter of fact, aesthetic views map very closely onto political differences of view, so that in looking at diversity of political view, we are also looking at the same time at diversity of aesthetic view. So that's what I want to do. And so, why do we care about diversity of view in general? Well, I want to suggest that there are really typically sort of three reasons here. And the first is an intrinsic reason, that we value diversity because we regard it as a good reflection of the freedom of expression. We actually value freedom of expression. So it's like, it's not actually what's said here in any manner of speaking, it's merely the fact that there is variety. It reflects the fact that we live in a society where there's freedom of expression. If there was absolutely no diversity, it would suggest that there was actually not much freedom of expression in the society in which we lived. So that's sort of valuing it for its own sake. And then there are a couple of instrumental reasons why we value diversity of view, which is to say that the diversity of view actually enables people to form better views, whether it be aesthetic views or political views. And I think there are two versions of this, which are the other two major reasons why pluralism of view is valued, and we have these public interest tests. One is the contest or competition view, and it sort of goes back to a very old idea that you first come across in Milton, actually, that actually it's by pitching good and bad ideas against each other that the good will prevail, and that's how the good gets emerges, is through a competition with the bad. That's how it gets tested and so on and so forth. Unless you have that competition between ideas, ideas don't get tested, put through their paces, and they don't evolve. It's a sort of competition idea. The other idea is much more static, and it's that a wisdom of crowds exists. And that is to say, it's a mathematical property that if you have a variety of views, then it turns out that if you take the average of those views, it is going to be subject to smaller errors than if you were to take any individual view by itself. The magnitude of the error would be smaller if you took the average of the views than if you took any individual view. And the gap there between the average and the typical error of any individual depends simply upon what the size of the diversity of view is. The bigger the diversity of view, the bigger the contraction from the actual individual error to the average error of the crowd as a whole. Wisdom of crowds. So, those are the general reasons, I think, that we find. And the question then is, do these reasons apply to aesthetics views as much as they do to political views? And what we do here is we take a case study of newspaper reviews of films using the Guardian database on the reviewer of reviews, which is each week they publish a review of the reviews and they give a numerical score to the review in each of the major broadsheet papers. And so we're going to use that database and use their scoring system, which of course is subject to all sorts of problems and so on and so forth. Nevertheless, it's done by one institution and it's then rating how these various reviews of a particular film translate into a numerical score from 1 to 10. The data looks something like this. It covers the 8 major broadsheets review sections in the daily and Sunday newspapers. And this gives the a box plot view of how the review scores vary by title of newspaper. And you'll see that their means are reasonably close, although the Independent is always rather meaner in its reviews than the other newspapers. But there's a fair amount of variation that each paper gives to the films that it's reviewing over this time period. This was done on their database from 2008 to 2010, and there were actually 344 films that were reviewed not by more than one title, but by four or more titles. In other words, they were reviewed by at least half of the broadsheets here. And there were 71 of those 344 films that were actually reviewed by all 8 of the broadsheet titles. So, that's the data. How am I going to approach this question then about is there an interesting diversity of view here that we might want to worry about? Well, I've effectively got two approaches to this. The first of which I think of as just a sort of rough and ready way of capturing, well, is this the kind of diversity of view that might be a reasonable expression of freedom of expression? Yeah, as it suggested, that there's an interesting diversity of view here. Or is it equally an interesting variety of view in the sense that it reflects the kind of degree of competition that you might find in a well-functioning market? Now, that I think is entirely speculative. I'll give you the quick little measure that I do with that in a moment, but you'll see how I use it. And then I've got some data on the wisdom of crowds, which I regard as the more significant part of this as to whether there is actually a significant diversity of views such that the property of wisdom of crowds holds with respect to these reviews as a whole. Because if there is, then indeed that suggests there is some significant diversity of view here. So here's the first thing. Now, if you take a look at the average variance of views for an individual film on this scale of 1 to 10, it's actually 2.78, the mean score is 5.5. And if you look at the variance of all the reviews, it's 5.51. Now, those figures in themselves are quite difficult to interpret. Now, what I suggest here is one way of thinking about this is to suppose that you had a very simple model that was determining these review scores that are given by each of the media outlets, which is to say that they were a random white noise error process on top of the true value of aesthetic value of the film in question. So that the score was a random white noise perturbation away from what the true value of the film was. Then it turns out that the average variance here is the same as this variance of this white noise term here, and that the total variance of all scores would be equal to the variance of the true value plus whatever this random white noise term was. But we know that the total variance is 5.5, and we know that the average variance of views for an individual film is 2.78. So that means that by residual, you'd find that the variance of the true values of these films was 2.73. In other words, the average variance of views on an individual film roughly speaking, the same as the variance of the true quality of these films as a whole sample. So if you think that across this 344 films, there was an interesting variance in the quality, in the true quality of films, then you ought to, in some sense, think that the variance that you typically got about the aesthetic value of any individual film was also itself interesting. So, my first bit of evidence here, which, as I say, I think you can either think of as sort of reflecting, well, if this is a reasonably functioning competitive market, it throws up a variance of true films of the following kind. What's the variance of views that we get? It's rather similar on any individual film to that. Let's go to the wisdom of crowds. This is just a mathematical expression for the wisdom of crowds. It is, as I say, a mathematical property, which is, well, much better known as a result of Sirecki book, but of course goes back to Francis Galton's famous piece in Nature in 1906. But basically it's a mathematical property that the average error on any assessment here is going to be equal to the average individual error minus whatever the variance is of the individual views. And that's why if there's a significant variance of individual views relative to the average individual error, it turns out that the crowd error is much, much smaller than if you were to randomly take one view and be guided by that. So the wisdom of crowds comes out of this property of the variance of individual views, and of course it doesn't always hold in any particular crowd, because there may be peer effects which diminish the variance of the individual views, or indeed affect the average individual error itself. So it's not a necessary property in any actual particular set of views, but it's a mathematical property if those conditions hold. So the question is, do they actually hold in practice? Do we find that the variance of views significantly lowers the average individual error? So if you were following one newspaper here, what is the kind of mistake that you would make as compared with if you took the average of all the reviews here and were guided by that, what would your error be with respect to the true quality? That's the issue. And the difference of that, if there's a benefit there, it's due to the variance. Is it significant or not? Well, to do this, of course, we have to be able to come up with a figure for the true value of each film. Because that way we can only see, relative to the assessment of these individual film reviews, how what their errors are like, and then we can take the averages and so forth. So, well, we've got two ways of doing that in this paper, of coming up with the model for what the true aesthetic value of a film is. One is to go back to that model that I just set out a moment ago, which is to say let's try and estimate this as a function of the underlying exogenous factors that might be affecting the true quality of it, and then the rest is going to be the random white noise term. Or we can take one of these sites, which is an amalgam of critics' reviews and individual reviews, and use their assessment of these films as the true value. And that's what we do. We use those two methods, and we use the IMDb as the sort of review of reviews grandly here as the basis for that. Let me give you the first one, the one where we implement in effect the model that I just put up along the previous lines. This is the regression equation that we run here. And we've just thrown in here, I'll just run through some of the variables that we're arguing might be related here to the true quality of a film. There's its release date. Well, that may reflect something about what the film studio itself thinks about the quality of the film. We've got here the years, dummies, and then we've got the nationality, and then we've got here whether they were nominated or not for an award, whether they won an award, but it was a minor award, or whether they won a major award, okay. And now we've got one thing in here that I'll just mention, is that we were interested in whether, because there's one staple of newspapers, the Times and the Sunday Times, which of course is owned by Rupert Murdoch, and Rupert Murdoch also owns 20th Century Fox. And so we were interested in whether there was any bias in the reviews that the Times and Sunday Times papers gave to the films that were being released by 20th Century Fox. In other words, this goes to the heart of whether one should be concerned about cross-media ownership or not. And so we actually put in both a general dummy for whether they were 20th Century Fox films that were being reviewed, and then an interact dummy here with whether this was being reviewed by a Times or Sunday Times, a News International newspaper. Well, you'll see here, the rest of these, I won't go through them all, there's things like box office receipts and the genre and so on and so forth. And the variables that prove significance are those that are in the yellow shaded boxes. They're kind of what you would expect, so there's some plausibility to this in the sense that awards turn out to be important, so does the year in which they're released, so does whether they're US or not, blah, 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 blah. And interestingly, although as a matter of fact, 20th Century Fox films on in this regression turn out on average to be worse in quality than other films, the interact variable, interestingly, between whether or not that's being reviewed by the Times and the Sunday Times, although indeed it is positive, it's not significant. So in that respect, no evidence of an unfortunate cross-media problem here. But so here we are. This is a true model, and we do this. And then here we calculate the... and we do this both for the sample of 70-odd films which are reviewed by all newspapers, and then we do it also by... the full sample of all of them. I focused here on the sample that are reviewed by all newspapers because I'm interested in how the wisdom of crowd property changes as you might drop one newspaper. In other words, supposing there was a merger or supposing one newspaper dropped out here, how would that affect the property of the wisdom of crowds? Well, you'll see here that over these 71 films, I can't actually see from this. You'll see that the collective error on the 71 films is considerably smaller than the average individual error. So if you were to follow one person or one of these reviewers, then you would make much, much larger error. It's, what, about 34% or something, the collective error relative to the average individual error. So a diminution in your error by 64%, something of that order. So quite considerable drop in the error that you'd make. And indeed, it's because you can see in the bottom row here, the variance of the individual predictions here is actually very large. And that's why you get this property for the wisdom of crowds. It's just interesting, whilst we're here, to review these other columns here where you're dropping individual newspapers. And you'll actually see, funny enough, the papers where the collective error rises most significantly if we were to lose those, or if we were to lose the Times and Sunday Times, or the Telegraph or the Sunday Telegraph, that they have the biggest effects here. And indeed, if we were to lose all the Sunday newspapers, then indeed that would be a very significant diminution in the wisdom of crowds here. This is the same wisdom of crowd decomposition, but now using the IMDb rating as the true rating of the film. And although the fall in the collective error relative to the average individual error is now smaller, it's not 64% drop, more like a 40% drop, I think, so that it's about 60% of the average individual error is the collective error, it's a 40% drop. Nevertheless, a very significant fall in the collective error relative to the average of the individual errors. And again, it's because there's quite a large variance of prediction here. And again, here you're having the same sort of exercise where actually the Telegraph this time, if you were to lose it, doesn't yield much of a change, but you're going to get a picture that if you were to lose the Times and the Sunday Times, the wisdom of crowd property actually would diminish noticeably. So, wisdom of the crowd, something of the order of a 40 to 60% drop in the error that you would make as an individual if you relied upon the average value of these reviews rather than any individual randomly chosen review. So, first two reasons, yes, I would suggest diversity of aesthetic view looks as if it is important. Question now, though, is when politics are focused on political diversity of view, were they nevertheless correct to do so because, as a matter of fact, the diversity of aesthetic view that we see in these newspapers maps onto political views. So that, as it were, the left-wing papers, Independent and Guardian Observer stables, they always give the same sort of positive reviews or negative reviews. They're strongly correlated, but they correlate very poorly, imperfectly, with the papers of the right, the Times and the Telegraph stable reviews. And if that was the case, then the political diversity would be captured, the aesthetic diversity, and so on. Now, the question is how are we going to do those calculations as to whether or not the diversity of aesthetic view maps onto diversity of political view. First thought, of course, is that we should simply look and see whether the reviews of the left-wing papers are positively or negatively correlated with the reviews of the right-wing newspapers. Trouble with that, of course, is, though, that they will be always positively correlated because they will be, if they're captured any of the features which is influencing the true aesthetic value of these films, they will be moving together in consequence of variation in the true value of the films in question. So we can't just use simple correlations. So what we do is we use two methods here. The first is a kind of peer effects approach, which is to say, go back to that model of the true model of the economy that I set out before with those estimated regression coefficients where the interactome with Rupert Murdoch's films and newspapers didn't have any effect. Go back to that. And now ask the question, is it the case that for any individual newspaper's score in that regression, it would help to include the score that was given to that film by any of the other newspapers? So do you know anything about what The Guardian is going to do by knowing what The Observer's going to do, or The Times is going to do, or The Sunday Independent is going to do, or anything like that? Are any of those important predictors of what The Guardian does? And you can do that for each newspaper and then see which other newspapers, controlling for all the things that are influencing the quality of films, nevertheless correlate together. Or you can calculate the errors for each newspaper using that true model, and then see whether the errors are correlated. And you can do that, again, using the IMDb rather than the true model of the economy. Again, I'm going to give you the results here that come from doing the peer effects on the true model of the economy rather than the IMDb data. As a matter of fact, if you do the correlation between the errors for individual newspapers, it's exactly the same, and for the IMDb data, again, qualitatively, you get exactly the same results. So here are the results of testing for those peer effects. That's what we've got. Now, what this means is that if you wanted to know the Guardian score using that model of the what determines the Guardian score, then it would actually help to know what the Observer and the Independent and the Sunday Times score was. You would improve the prediction. Likewise, for the Observer, if you knew the Guardian score and the Times score and the Sunday Telegraph score, then you would improve the prediction. In other words, these are the peer effects that are identified as statistically significant. Now, I won't go through the lot of them. One thing I think that you'll notice, which sort of slightly echoes something that we saw before, is that actually the newspaper that is least influenced by those peer effects is actually the Telegraph. There's only one other newspaper that would be useful to know the score of and able to be able to predict it, and that is actually the Guardian. And again, the result is interestingly consonant with the general results here in picking that out, which is, of course, that actually, if these aesthetic differences of view mapped onto political differences of view, it should be the case that in the top left hand quadrant here, where we've got the left wing papers organised, these all ought to be positive because they all ought to be influencing each other in the same way. And the ones in these off diagonal quadrants they all ought to be negative, because here's the right in the newspapers. Or put it slightly differently, where we look at these significant influences, take a newspaper like The Guardian, or take a newspaper like The Observer together, the two together, you'll see that The Guardian and Observer between them, there are three cases where they're mutually influenced by other papers on the left, but they're also, there are three occasions where they're mutually influenced by papers on the right, and they're positive influences in all cases. So a left-wing newspaper is just as likely to be correlated with a right-wing newspaper as it is with a left-wing newspaper, the views, the aesthetic views. So in that sense, and indeed, I just do this here, this is what you'd expect, the positives here on the main diagonal and the negatives on the off diagonal. And if you just total them up and say, okay, we'll put a tick for each time there's a positive where there should be a positive, and a minus for when there is a negative or a positive where there should be the reverse, then it turns out that the total score in this table here is actually minus two. So you are no more likely, if you're a left-wing newspaper, to have your aesthetic views correlated with another left-wing newspaper than you are to find that they're correlated with a right-wing newspaper. So, I'm going to stop and say, I think that there is an interesting intrinsic diversity of aesthetic view, in the sense that the variety of views on any individual film maps the variety of the quality of films that are released. So if you think that's an important difference, then you should think the views are importantly different. There are also significant wisdom of the crowd effects. You reduce the error by 40 to 60%, depending how you measure it, non-trivial. Variance in view in that sense is significant. It produces quite a big wisdom of the crowd effect. Be most affected by the loss of either the Times or Telegraph titles, or the Sundays, actually. Not unfortunately the Guardian and Observer. There's no good mapping of aesthetic diversity onto political diversity, so it would be wrong to imagine that if we think this diversity of aesthetic view is important, that it's captured by a concern with political diversity. And there's no evidence of News International bias for News International films. And so there's a surprise. Well, what I think we know is that there are significant differences of aesthetic view, but they're orthogonal, as it were, to political differences of view. And so, in that sense, what is true, by focusing on the broadsheets, we're focusing on middle class. That's absolutely right. But amongst the middle class, it turns out that's we know that actually differences in aesthetic view that are promulgated by newspapers are orthogonal to the differences in political view that are associated with those newspapers. And, I agree about the point about it would have been very nice if one had been able to include the review section of some non-sheet tabloid newspapers. But the truth of the matter is they just don't do the reviews.
What about the Evening Standard? Does that still do reviews?
Don't know. But the trouble is, the review sections of they're quite pitiful compared with the review sections of broadsheets.
If you're looking for political bias, maybe you're looking at it from one particular point of view, and maybe there are other ways to find the political bias in the way. Maybe the don't want to lose kind of, don't want to kind of alienate your audience by saying this great film is nonsense because it espouses some view I don't like. But you want to say this view, this paper, this thing is great because it explains why I'm right and why it's right about political views. So perhaps there is, I don't know how you would test that.
No, I quite see the point, and I quite see the point of the last comment. I'm not quite sure how you would test in that sense, but well, except you could only do it at a very, very much more granular level than you're able to easily get the data on, because you'd have to actually, as it were, inspect films for the character of what the storyline was suggesting. I think.
Does it matter, or is it interesting that the three strongest three strongest relationships between newspapers seem to be between very closely related publications. If you go back a couple of slides. So The Guardian to Independent is 0.45, Independent to Independent on Sunday is 0.42, and Sunday Telegraph or Sunday Times is 0.42. So those are the three strongest predictors.
Yeah.
But it could be it.
Well, no, I mean, but put it like this, if you were to do, say, not just a simple number adding up, but a sort of totaling of the coefficients, it wouldn't yield anything different, because you've got a couple there that are, they're all doing it, so they would, yeah, they would.
I've got an idea. Maybe you should test for particular reviews of by particular directors, because there's a handful of directors on there who are very known for their political views. It would be kind of interesting whether you tested the particular views by particular filmmakers who were known for their extremely left or extremely right politics, whether that then produced a political effect.
Yeah, I agree. That would be interesting to see whether that was the case. Yeah. Nevertheless, even if that was the case, the point would remain that, as a matter of fact, taken across the whole compass of films in this period, if you had simply been concerned, as it were, by political diversity, you would have missed the aesthetic diversity entirely. Because there may well be individual films that, so to speak, act as the test by which suddenly people jump one way and then the other. But taken the oeuvre as a whole, it would not have been a good guide. John?
People who live in glass houses shouldn't throw stones, but I'm going to talk about your quality measure. Well, so do you use the user score in IMDb or the Metascore from Metacritic?
The
Metascore. So two things. One is it might be interesting, if you think of reviews not as aesthetic judgments, but of exhortations to go see it. It's good enough, you should go see it. Then why not just use box office revenue as the thing you're trying to predict? So that's one thought, and it wouldn't be that hard to do since these data are pretty readily available.
Well, box office receipts is actually one of the explanatory variables we have in
it. But it should be the dependent variable. It is the measure of whether one should have gone to see it ex post. That people did, you know. Anyways, the other thing
I see the point entirely. Yeah.
But you could go to Metacritic directly and get lots more data. Right? You could have, it wouldn't be the same outlets, but Metacritic has film reviews, you know, they aggregate film reviews as well. So if you want a lot more data, you could just go to Metacritic.
I should add that it's been a lot of work in cultural economics on trying to predict box office success using all kinds of things. I'm not sure whether reviews are part of them, but certainly, you know, the size of the budget and all that kind of thing.
Yes, yes,
yes. I don't know if that would be at all relevant.
Yes. I suppose that I started off from a general presumption, actually partially because I suppose because of the bigger literature which looks at the relationship between box office performance and subsequent critical evaluation in these lists of best movies of all time and so on and so forth, and finding that actually box office isn't a very good predictor of those quality attributes of films, and that's why we didn't go there. But I quite see the point in the sense, if you want to cut through this and say, I'm going to have this notion of what quality is, which is just market determined, then you use that audience.
Well, if you also think of review as advice about what to go see. You know, especially in middle-brow publications, it really is, you should go see this,
yeah,
it would be
right,
fun.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
Not that it's meaningful or interesting.
Yes.
Thought-provoking.
Yeah. Yes. That's right. But then, okay. So then the question is though, if that's the nature of what the review is, which is about advice to go and see it, and whatever its quality is, the question is: are we necessarily interested in the diversity of those views?
But in the wisdom of crowd sense, we are. We want to know whether having 100 of those to aggregate would predict better than having 10 of those. So I mean, I think that is part of your motivation. So it'd be interesting to see how the quality of the average as a predictor varies with the number of...
Well, that's true, but why would we be interested in being a wisdom of crowds in that sense, except for being able to predict box office success? Which I take it is doesn't have a public interest.
Well, if I were you, I would use box office success, the user score, and the meta score. You know, I'd have three bites at the apple on true quality.
Yeah, no, I take the point, yes.
Just one quick does this data all relate to a period after which the star has been introduced as a measure of a review, and the use of the 5-star, 4-star, 3-star, which seems to be a kind of significant move in the way in which papers represented their reviews, and indeed the role of who decided that, because there's some reports, you get anecdotal, I know, between what journalists or critics would want to include and what editors think something ought to have. And
yes.
What we're also seeing is, as it were, a different role for the review in the paper as well.
Well, this is as the shift takes place. I mean, most of these reviews will have, no, I don't say most because I didn't do it, so I backtrack. In my impression, is that this is exactly the time period where some of these, there's a Guardian journal who's read the review and attributes a score, and then there are some of these that are indeed are the star system, and so because they've got 5 stars, they've simply doubled the number of stars to get to this 1 to 10 scale. So that it's a mixture of the two. But there were some, you know, Guardian folk who were, as it were, interpreting the review and attaching a number to it, having read the review.
Well, the other thing is that you might say that reviewers are more worried about what other reviewers think than what the public thinks. I mean, I've certainly seen review. You know, when you go to concerts, you can see all the journalists getting together and in the interval and hobnobbing over.
Well, but Ruth,
so they kind of have already sort of got the kind of a view.
Yeah. Absolutely, but it's exactly against that backdrop. That you wouldn't, I mean, that's why we know there's some version of that is going on, a kind of group thing. But and that's why the calculation with respect to the wisdom of crowds is important, because if that was very significant, it would destroy the wisdom of crowds.
Right.
And so, you know, that's not to dispute that that isn't going on, because I think we all know there's a version of group thing that's going on here. It would be very surprising if any social group, if that wasn't the case. But whatever that is, it's not sufficient to actually reduce the improvement that comes from the wisdom of the crowd. By us, it's quite a significant amount. But absolutely. Yeah.
Sean, is there a sense that nobody picks their newspaper on the basis of reviews, and therefore groupthink is a good thing because you just want to read the review, and ideally just the same person did it everywhere? Or is it that they're actually trying to differentiate themselves a bit, in which case you would find differences because you would have to profile yourself rather differently from the other guys?
Well, the truth of the matter is, if groupthink was very strong, then we'd have no property of wisdom of crowds, and you might as well read one rather than bothering about reading a lot, and which you chose would be neither here nor there. That's right. And of course, the question is, in a sense, how are we to understand why there is this diversity of view? And it may well be that, as it were, it reflects genuine differences of aesthetic view of the reviewers who are actually making the reviews, or it could be that actually they are quite consciously positioning themselves as in the market for reviews as they understand it, and yielding some optimal product differentiation for that purpose.
I guess that's where the political nature of the maybe director or something like that would be a useful thing to look at.
Well, yes.
Because, I mean, that might be what
it might be, but then the truth of the matter is that actually, whilst I grant you that there are some films of that kind, most of these films are not going to fit into that category. And so there's a whole mass of films here for which, even if those were the effects, they're dwarfed by what's going on in the mass of films. So,
sorry, we need to wrap up here. I invite you to continue talking about this over drinks. But firstly, the organisers would like to talk briefly.
Well, did I start? You start.
Thank you, Sean.
Thank you, Sean.
I think the first thing I should say on behalf of Kuwait really is it's been a wonderfully well organized event. It's been stimulating and I think there was quite intense attention throughout the day. I think it's always a very, very good sign. We will see whether we can capture some of this. I think we filmed Joel's lecture and we may try to get some of the presentations if we can. We have PhDs with interest in the graph in the crowd, so maybe we can get a few blocks. So it would be nice to have something which stays from the day. But anyway, I think it's been really an exemplary event. It's been a great pleasure. I should advertise a few things. So what are our next events? In March, we have a symposium on copyright policy and history in Glasgow on the 26th and 27th of March. Then on the 31st of March, 1st of April, we have Smart Cities, a big conference at Strathclyde organized by Lillian Edwards. On the 13th of May, we have the kind of pilot, the user platform in Nottingham, a kind of technology-focused event. And then on the 2nd and 3rd of December, we've got EPIP, the European Policy for IP conference in Glasgow. That has got a PhD day before that, on the 1st of September. So I assume all PhDs probably should put that in their diary now. I hope to have a call out within the week, really. I've said it a few times. It has to go out. And the PhD workshop will look in the usual EPIP style. Will half of the day will be done by an economist, half of the day will be done by a lawyer, and it will be an attempt again to get the disciplines talking to each other. Okay, I think on the evidence wiki, I think we will write to you directly. I think on the next steps, it would be great to have involvement from the consortium as much as possible on that. And I think also Jesus on our data analytics, we're also keen to hear what you think we should do. Great. Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much, Martin. I would also like to thank you all for coming here all the way to Norwich. It is a bit out in the core of the country. I hope you've had two good days. I think we've had a lot of interesting talks. I want to also do a little bit of promotional here. This is the Centre's summer conference, which is not unrelated to what we have been talking about, but very much focused on issues that arise in competition law antitrust. And so here's a bunch of the speakers who are going to be here and will be covering a number of things that is not necessarily relevant here, including e-discovery and issues such as that. The only other thing I would like to, especially if Yanis has managed to get Nikki up here, is I'd like to thank, first of all, the Create team for their help that they've offered us with this whole organization, also Martin. But I would particularly like to thank Nikki, who has done all the hard work at UEA. If she's not coming up, then we'll just have to thank her when we go downstairs, because there are drinks downstairs. So we can at least get our own back in that way. But thank you very much to all of you. And there are drinks downstairs. Well, maybe no. I think they're downstairs.
I just saw Nikki get my phone go by.
Okay. Well, wherever she is, and there will be some local beer as well, not just wine. This is important. Ah, there she is, Nikki. Thank you.